and I thank you not to work out how old that makes me. So you see, I know exactly what she's thinking right now. Captain Romance from beyond the sky. Norfolk girls of my class are virgins in more ways than one. I'm not about to let some oversexed stranger ruin her future. She has a slim enough chance of a happy one as it is, what with arranged marriages and minimal education, which is the lot of females on this planet, even for our class. And I'm doing you a favour into the bargain. Me? You. Grant would kill you, if you ever laid a finger on her. And Joshua, I don't mean metaphorically. He couldn't believe that, not even in this society. So I'm going to sacrifice my virtue to save both of you. She undid the belt and slipped the robe from her shoulders. Sultry red light gleamed on her body, embellishing the erotic allure. Isn't that just so terribly noble of me? The emergent snow lily plants were starting to be a problem around the village jetties along the length of the Julif and its multitudinous tributaries. The tightly clumped red-brown fronds occupied the shallows, the banks, and the mud banks, none of which affected the Issachar as it sailed its unerringly straight course along the Zamjan towards the Qualheim counties, carrying its boisterous passenger complement of 4 Confederation Navy Marines and 3 Kulu ESA Tactical Operation Agents. Issachar hadn't put ashore once since it left Durringham. It was an 18-metre-long fishing boat with a carvo hull of mayope sturdy enough for its original owners to take it down to the mouth of the Julif and catch sea fish in their nets. Ralph Hilch had ordered its thermal conversion furnace to be taken out and got the boatyard to install the microfusion generator which the Kulu Embassy used as its power reserve. With one high-pressure gas canister of helium-3 and deuterium for fuel, Issachar now had enough power to circumnavigate the globe twice over. Jenny Harris was lying on her sleeping bag under the plastic awning they had rigged up over the prow, out of the light drizzle sweeping the river. The sheeting didn't make much difference, and her shorts and white T-shirt were soaking. 4 days of sailing without a break from the humidity left her vainly trying to remember whether she had ever been dry. A couple of the Marines were on their sleeping bags beside her, Louis Beath and Nils Regger, barely out of their teens. They were both vising their personal MF players, eyes closed, fingers tapping out chaotic rhythms on the deck. She envied their optimism and confidence. They treated the scouting mission with an almost schoolboyish enthusiasm, although she admitted they were well-trained and physically impressive with their boosted muscles. A tribute to their lieutenant, Murphy Hewlett, who had kept his small squad's morale high, even on a dead-end posting like Lalonde. Nils Rigger had confided they all thought the mission upriver was a reward, not a punishment. Her communication block datavised that Ralph Hilch was calling. She got to her feet and walked out from under the awning, giving the young Marines some privacy. The dampness in the air wasn't noticeably increased. Dean Folan, her deputy, waved from the wheelhouse amidships. Jenny acknowledged him, then leant on the gunwale and accepted the channel from the communication block. "I'm updating you on the Edenist agents," Ralph datavised. "You found them?" she queried. It had been 20 hours since they had gone off air. "Chance would be a fine thing." "No, and the observation satellite images show that Ozark village is being abandoned. People are just drifting away, walking into the jungle, as far as we can tell. We must assume they have been either sequestrated or eliminated. There is no trace of the boat they were using, the Coogan. The satellite can't see it anywhere on the river."
"I see."
"Unfortunately, the Edenists knew you were coming upriver behind them."
"Hell fire!"
"Exactly. So if they have been sequestrated, the invaders will be watching out for you." Jenny ran a hand over her head. Her ginger hair had been shaved down to a half-centimetre stubble, the same as everyone else on board. It was standard procedure for jungle missions, and her combat shell helmet would make better contact. But it did mean anyone who saw them would immediately know what they were. "We weren't exactly inconspicuous anyway," she later devised.